Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It's the 9th of April. Very nice to have you with us. And we thank you for being a part of our program. We welcome you to write letters and comment on what we're talking about this morning. All you have to do is write to panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. Full house this morning. Let me introduce our panelists as I go around the table here. Libby Post is here. She is a communications political consultant. My apologies. Consultant. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Did you have a nice weekend? Everything good? Everything?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes. From what I can remember.
Okay. Well, maybe more of a party than I thought.
No.
Okay. Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant. She joins us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing fine. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Red Sox had a good weekend, so I'm happy.
Good.
Yeah, I know everyone's anxious for the Red Sox report.
Well, I am.
Actually, I have to say then that the Mets are in first place, and Ray and I are very happy about that.
There you go.
Does he have his Mets tie on today in celebration?
I don't think so.
That's just opening day.
Joe Bonilla is with us. He is also a communications consultant. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning to you.
Very nice to have you. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, it's just great. You come into work and you say, you quote the great Selma Kaplan, who says, "What fresh hell today?"
That's right. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of it.
And we're finding out, aren't we? Yes. Well, good morning, everybody. Very nice to have you with us. And let me start by going to the stories for today. We have a lot of them, so we begin with Syria. And we begin with, as the president looks for a way out of Syria, now there's a chemical attack reports and muddling the president Trump's plans for an exit. A reported chemical attack on a Damascus suburb seems to raise the political and military stakes as President Trump charts the United States' future in Syria. On one hand, he has emphatically expressed his desire to bring American troops home as soon as possible. On the other, he has vowed to punish some, quote, bad actors. And meanwhile, Israel is accused of bombing Syrian airbase after an attack. Damascus and Moscow said Israel had carried out airstrikes on a military base in the Homs province that houses Iranian militias. That, according to officials who say 14 reportedly killed in that attack. So a lot going on in that part of the world. So let us begin there. Alan, what do you make of the situation, both politically and obviously for the attacks that are happening?
Well, it is clear to me that Israel probably did it, and that the United States didn't. Although I am quite sure there was probably back channel correspondence going on between them about this. The planes that the Syrians say did the damage were F-16s. I'm very naive about this stuff, but it seems to me that those are planes that we manufacture and, you know, and that they get. There is an opening fissure here, which is very interesting to me, between Russia and the United States, because there are those people who feel that Trump is at the mercy of the Russians. And that if he starts up with them, interesting information might come out. We don't know if that's the case, but we know at least one former national security advisor has said that he thinks it is the case that they have something, on him. So every time he goes out and does something like this, and now he is talking about, bearding the Russians and the Syrians, he creates a potential problem for himself.
Well, I think it's interesting. This morning we heard on the news that the markets in Moscow went down because of the sanctions. And these are the exact same people that purportedly have been supporting Trump, not only politically but financially, backing his hotels and his real estate and his business. But it's a great balancing act, and I don't think he knows how to handle it. But what I found the most striking was the picture in the New York Times where you had Rouhani from Iran, Erdogan from Turkey, and Putin from Russia, and we are nowhere to be seen in this. And this just is so indicative of what this man has done to our standing in the world, that we are no longer seen as someone, as a country that can help manage these crisis situations. Instead, we're just one of the crisis actors in them.
Well, it's certainly, again, to Libby's point, it's American retreat and American confusion in terms of international relations. And certainly, as you know, we begin the John Bolton tenure as the National Security Advisor.
Beginning today.
Right, beginning today. This is again, the first opening salvo in terms of what we're going to see of Bolton this week.
Mm-hmm. Which we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on. Teresa.
Yeah, I'm curious if the experts, which I'm certainly not about Syria, it's so complicated, but if they would say that the Israelis basically took the pressure off of Trump, helped him by doing the strike because there was going to be a lot of pressure for him to do something quickly, or will the U.S. Will the U.S. still feel the need to move now and do something, or is this the thing that needed to happen? I'm always curious. Chemical weapons are so horrendous. But as some people have noted, many more have been killed in Russian and other airstrikes in Syria. I mean, poor people of Syria, it's basically, you know, they're in the midst of a proxy war in different regions, different wars in different regions of their country, and they're suffering from all of it. But I'd be interested in if any of the military people, retired or active, who might be listening, or people with diplomatic background, what their thoughts are on, you know, the chemical weapons. We seem to react much differently when it's chemical weapons, when it's not, and they certainly are horrendous. But in terms of the numbers of death, it's far fewer than some of these others.
No, but you're right. It is the chemical issue which has gotten the attention of the world.
Right.
Because we know from World War One and other places that once you start with that stuff, it's really awful. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Assad keeps doing it, despite the assurances that it's not going to happen and we're not going to see it.
We didn't do it. I mean, he has said point blank, we didn't do it.
But do you think it's any coincidence that, you know, they met last Thursday, Trump said that he's pulling out, and then there's a chemical attack?
No,
do you think that that's all?
No, I do. And I think Israel, if Israel's behind these, the missile attacks, it gives Trump cover to say, oh, we can't pull out now.
Right.
Well, I thought it might give him a little breathing room to take some pressure off him having to strike because they did. Well, you know, the U.S. could well strike today, but where are you going to strike?
Right.
No, you know, there's three different wars going on in Syria, as best I know, maybe more, but and they're distinct. And one of the analysis talked about the fact that at some point you might have UN forces fighting against mm-hmm. each other. You know, it's so complex and. You know, this is a Pollyannish part of me, but do they even know what it's all about anymore?
No.
And then there's the question of where you strike.
Right.
That's the question.
Well,
where would the U.S. strike?
Right. You can't.
Do you strike, you know, at a military base, or do you strike at Assad's palaces? in which case the Russians come in and that's how the world war starts.
Right.
I mean, and you've got to be very cautious about striking where the chemical weapons are,
because
if you strike where the chemical weapons are, you can create a bigger human tragedy. So you need to, you know, get rid of the chemical weapons, but with airstrikes, that's not the way to go.
Well, those chemical weapons might very well be in the basement of the palace, because that's how they operate. The human shield part of this.
But who's the they in this sentence?
All of them.
You know, is it Assad? Is it?
Yeah.
Who is the they?
But you know, when they hold hostages, they don't do it with themselves. They do it with little children.
That's right.
They do it with other people.
Right.
So,
But Assad has a family. I mean, I'm just thinking, where else would they put it besides the military bases? They could very well have a bunker underneath
schools,
with that
hospitals,
stuff. There's, you know, hospitals, all those kinds of places, so they use a human shield.
Anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
The tweets that came out of the White House yesterday, many dead, including women and children in mindless chemical attack in Syria. Area of atrocity is in lockdown and encircled by Syrian army, making it completely inaccessible to outside world. President Putin, Russia, and Iran are responsible for backing animal Assad. Big price.
Yeah. Right.
To pay. Open area immediately for medical help and verification. Another humanitarian disaster for no reason whatsoever. Sick. And then the third and final tweet from yesterday. If President Obama had crossed his stated red line in the sand, the Syrian disaster would have ended long ago. Animal Assad would have been history.
Yeah, except for the president, Trump drew a red line, and he may not want to cross it. So did that tweet get reviewed by diplomats and others before he tweeted it out?
I think you know the answer to that
joking?
Question.
But what are the implications of that, though? There's just so many different things in that tweet that are troubling. And
but we've been living with the implications of his tweets and the recklessness of them since before the campaign started.
What, does that change today with John Bolton coming in?
No.
Well, you know, I think the thing that is so scary about this is Bolton's coming in. The president doesn't know what base he's on. One day he's in, one day he's out. This is the kind of indecisiveness that leads to real big troubles. Going back to the assassination of an archduke.
Yeah, right, right. And Bolton is just as combative and loves the fight as Trump does. So it would be, you know, to be the fly on the wall. And you wonder if John Kelly's going to be able to have any mollifying impact on any of this. You know, it could be the button could be pushed much sooner than we thought because of the kinds of people that are in the White House right now.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, I just love what Alan said of this, just this idea of, you know, he doesn't know what base he's on. I mean, that's what you feel is just that we, this is...
it's chaos.
I mean, it is chaos, and this is what I think a lot of people were worried about when you get somebody who is so inexperienced. Mm-hmm. But also, there was the hope that you would at least surround yourself with people who had experience, and we're seeing that not to be the case. And then the people who have the experience and perhaps have a steady hand... Kelly, which is even questionable, but at least is a general and has some thoughts on this, seems to be sidelined. And when he screams, he's put into the corner, and at least according to the published reports over the weekend, and is not, may or may not be on his way out this week or next.
Well, again, it's perpetual Kelly watch. But going back to the point about, you know, who he brought on these second and third stringers to begin with. And now he's replacing them with even more rookies at that point. So, again, this leads to further instability, right?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I was just thinking about John Bolton. His job, the National Security Advisor's job, is to be a quote-unquote honest broker and to, particularly in cases like complex cases like what's going on in Syria now, to bring in the range of viewpoints and let the president, the leader, hear those range of viewpoints and decide, you know, make decisions. But there's no one who suggests that that's his, you know, nature, the experience with him. He has some very strong views, and by all accounts, his history is to provide information that supports his views. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, Syria, the Middle East is complex, Syria is extraordinarily complex. This is a very tough needle to thread. And what kind of advice is he going to get in working his way through this?
When it comes to, that advice, but again, and I know we keep saying this, but where is the House? Where is the Senate? Where are the leaders in the House and Senate? Even the Republican leaders, the Democratic leaders, where is anybody talking about the concerns that they have?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're ramping up for re-election. I mean, that's pretty obvious. They're ramping up for re-election, and they're focusing on their own necks and not on anybody else's.
Yes, but they may have a small problem looking back if this thing really explodes.
Sure, absolutely.
What is really worrying to me is Bolton is terrible. But the idea that the president doesn't know where he is or what he's doing, and he's flailing about. Mm-hmm. One day we should get out of Syria. One day we should, you know, we'll have to attack Assad. One day it's the Russians. This is the kind of instability that leads to real bad results.
Well, it does, and we don't know. And we don't know how bad, but there doesn't seem to be. I think wouldn't we all in this room, but certainly the nation as a whole, feel a little bit better if there seemed to be a steady hand somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, right.
There's no adult in the room at all. And the best and the brightest left the building.
I think there are adults in the room. They're just bad adults.
Well, but what I'm talking about, adults in the room who can make a good decision, who can think beyond their own self-preservation.
And then, again, back to this. So let's talk about our allies for a second. Let's talk about the others involved in this. And
well, apparently, Joe, we're looking at France as a stable ally, you know, in all of this, and reaching out to the French. But you know, these options are limited. They are really limited.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll talk a little bit more about this. We'll have letters. We'll also talk about John Bolton in a little more detail. And, of course, we have many other stories to discuss, lots of other things going on in the world as well. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post make up the panel today. And, again, of course, you can make your voice heard by going to panel@WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. And we welcome your letters. Alan has a stack, and we'll get through those and move on to other topics.
Mary writes, who's really responsible? Do you know of any speculation as to whether the gas and nerve agent attacks are being carried out by a small, rogue group in order to gain power by causing trouble between the major players? And that's from Mary. Anybody want to comment? I'll comment. I think it's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. Nancy says, Democrats and tariffs. Good morning, panel. I read an article this morning that so-called progressive Democrats led by Chuck Schumer are supporting tariffs to be imposed by Trump. I find this horrifying. One, tariffs don't work. Two, why would Democrats want to be on the side of Trump on anything, let alone this economically important decision? I hope you will discuss the issue. And that's from Nancy of East Hampton, Massachusetts.
I know Schumer has mentioned that recently about his support of the tariffs. I've seen that at a few different press conferences recently. I don't know if it's more or less trying to at least get on the same side of the president on at least one issue.
Well, I do think that the presidents and Schumer have a relationship. I don't think there's any question about it. No, Libby is shaking her head.
No, I agree with you. I don't think there is a relationship. I think it's transactional.
Right.
When they actually can get something from one another, they will
they
get
trade.
Something like they did, you know, at the beginning. Oh, we settled DACA,
right,
you know,
right,
all those months ago, which wasn't true.
But I agree with Alan. Like, they seem to be willing to to work with each
other. Well, Chuck's not an idiot. He sees an opening and will take it.
Right.
Well,
and
I
he's
consider
a leader,
him a friend,
that's a job.
But I have to tell you, there are days I sort of scratch my head on Schumer and think that, look, this is a time for all-out warfare, for want of a better word, against Trump. I think this guy is such a threat to this country that I wouldn't be playing footsie with him if I were Schumer.
Well, I think they're all a little gun shy, and it's all within the Beltway, and they're not hearing anything outside of that. And
yeah, but you got to be a national leader.
You've got to appeal
to your troops. Teresa was shaking her head, and I take it you have some trouble with what I just said.
Yeah, I do think that it can't all be politics, that you have to govern at some point, and that they have to figure out, are there some things where there is common agreement where you can get stuff done? I think that the Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer were very strategic and effective around the budget. And, you know, you ended up with a budget that, given that you have a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, really prevented a lot of serious backsliding.
And in fact, you saw this morning, Teresa, that Trump is saying he gave away too much in the budget and he wants a budget rescission.
Right. But what you're going to see today, though, is the CBO number is going to come out, and it show, because of the tax package, I'm guessing, if it's not out already, pretty significant deficits, debt. And but I do think that we have a problem with China in terms of imbalance of trade. You know, I've said along throughout this, I agree that there is a problem with an imbalance of trade. There's a problem with them stealing our IP, and there's a problem that we have to be aware of owning our own key infrastructure in the U.S. Now, how you address that is, it's again a tough needle to thread. You know, it's a really complex thing to do. How do you do it without starting a trade war? And how do you do it given the broader context of the issues going on with North Korea? So I don't know that Trump is going about it the right way, but I think that to have the Democrats in the conversation about what is the right way to help right this imbalance a bit is an important conversation.
So let me just say, I hear you. I think that's what you do when you're arguing. You say, I hear you.
Right.
What a great point. However.
Right.
That's interesting, but.
Yeah. On the other hand, you take a look at Trump. Here he is, the lion tamer, throwing red meat into the cages of all of the folks, you know, who adore him and who...
Hurting the soybean farmers. Read today's Washington Post. Boy, really hurting the soybean farmers.
Well, that's right. And who follow him. Okay, so now he becomes a leader in that he mobilizes his people. Doesn't help. I'm not giving him any credit for it. I hate it. I think that what he's doing is ruining the country. Nevertheless, he is. So you say, okay, the Republicans or the Trumpians, for want of a better word, have Trump. Who do we have? We have a guy who is playing in the Beltway, but who is not a leader aggressively mobilizing his people. You see, that's my problem. You're looking at me quizzically. Who have we got?
I'm not quite sure which.
Who is the leader, right, who is going to do for the Democrats?
The only person who's been able to do that is Bernie.
Yes, in the past, right. And Bernie is basically
exactly what has he done
to organize people, to bring people together, to give people a sense of belonging to another political movement that will fight Trump. That's what Alan's talking about. And what's happening, it's happening on a local level.
There's a difference between rallying people and governing people.
Right, I get that.
I understand that he rallies people.
But what he's talking about is rallying people, because Trump can rally, he can't govern. Our people like to govern, and that can't necessarily rally, but there's a lot of things going on local levels all over the country, can't discount that. It's just that there's no big star, for all of us to rally around. What we're doing is rallying around our own communities and making change here, and that's how it happens.
Well, I don't think so. I think you have to have a leader. I think you have to have somebody who rises to the occasion and who does bring people because I think it's so serious what Trump represents in terms of a threat. You have to have somebody who's up there. Now, Teresa makes a very good point about, okay, in the Beltway, you got a good budget and all the rest of it. But Trump is a menace to this country and to its future. I think it demands a leader who comes up and says, okay, look, we got to fight this and rally around me. And I agree with you. It's not that you were a Bernie supporter. It's mm-hmm. No, you weren't. But it is that Bernie had that sort of magic.
The charisma. That fire.
It's the
charisma. I don't know that there's certainly not a singular voice, but there certainly are some core issues that people the Democrats are rallying around the basic norms and decencies in governing and democracy. They're rallying around preserving health care. They're rallying around, there's some, on the gun issue, security issues.
Teresa,
but
just
it's mostly
wrong,
economic
I
issues.
Think. I say that. I'm sorry.
That no, that's fine.
Wrong way to put it. I think.
No,
you're
no,
just,
that's fine.
I think,
yeah,
I think,
especially
I,
when you're talking about guns, not a good.
Especially
idea.
When you're talking to Teresa. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are all of those issues, and yet we read in the paper that on health care, you say people are really rallying around health care. Maybe they were once, but I don't know now. And we see all of the dropouts from Obamacare, which has been reported assiduously in the press. So I think it's gone. I think that's gone. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to argue that with you. I'm arguing only one thing. The Democrats and the people who are and the independents need a leader, and they don't have one in Chuck Schumer.
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I like Chuck, and I think
too.
He's doing a good job.
I don't think he's a national.
But we need somebody with charisma, with some ability to rally people around the flag, to come to the progressive democratic, you know, mantle. The issue is whether or not we, as progressives and Democrats, will be able to put our own minutia aside.
Because I would take any mantle.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be.
But there are plenty of people on the left.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I worry about the Bernie people. Because
we're going to get a lot of letters from all of our talking at the same time. So one at a time.
There's a lot of people on the left that won't take just any mantle. And that's going to be part of the problem of finding someone to lead this.
I understand the problems politically. But the idea of right now of someone rising to the occasion and using their office and of whether it be a Democrat or a Republican, of somebody who is rising and saying, okay, this is going on, we're in a serious situation. Everybody else outside the bubble is wincing and saying it. Why isn't anyone inside the bubble saying it?
And if you go back in history, you have Franklin Roosevelt coming up the way that he did, and becoming such a person. He was governor of New York, of course, but he knew what he was doing, and he knew how to pull back, go forward. You know, that's what we need now, and we do not have it. Somebody's going to say, "What about so and so, Jackie Schmertz from New Jersey?" You know, come on,
Jackie Schmertz.
Jackie Schmertz. At least it's not Jackie Schmutz.
Yeah.
I was very careful about that.
All right. Well,
that voice will emerge.
There are
like Obama.
It takes time to
jockey. We need them now, though.
Right.
Well, you have a Kamala Harris. You've got some people who are starting to emerge, and unfortunately, we want to see somebody right now because we see the danger that's right around the corner because of the orange threat in the White House. But it doesn't happen overnight.
It takes time.
You want some more letters?
I can need two more letters, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and get to more.
Okay. Good Monday morning. What about the possibility that Trump and Putin are in cahoots about creating tension and planting rationale for war? If both countries benefit the war, the military-industrial complex possible? Thank you for the panel, and that's from Michelle. Michelle, in all your response, I don't think so. I don't think that's what's happening here.
No.
What, that they're working
Putin
together?
They're working. Well, on one level, they may be working together.
Right.
But not on this chemical attack. I think this chemical attack is baiting him to stay in.
Speaking of which, hi, panel. One troubling aspect of the reporting this morning about the vile, inhuman Syrian government nerve gas attack on civilians was the comment that the U.S. was assessing the situation. It is, in quotes, assessing. Mm-hmm. It is surprising the U.S. does not have enough undercover intelligence from the area to have a ready response to such a clear violation of international law. Does the panel have any thoughts on what the assessment would involve? I'm not the president. I know one thing. Sure, we've got assets. We know what's going on. We certainly have a guy who is impetuous, to say the least.
I think it's comforting that they didn't just strike first. And I think that the initial response, you saw it, was the Israeli strike. I mean, that didn't happen without phone calls. I mean, don't know that for a fact, but I just can't imagine.
It's reasonable to ascertain that, right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. We have many more topics to discuss. We'll get to all of that right after this short break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. We have a lot of letters, so we'll go to those, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Dear panel, Axios reported that Netanyahu called Trump Tuesday and unsuccessfully tried to talk him out of pulling out of Syria, and that he now realized we are, quote, on our own. Found this interesting now that we see Israel has bombed a Syrian base. That's Bobby and Troy. Charles says, keep in mind, panel, even Bolton is not safe from our shake-it-up captain, who knows neither the ship nor the sea. As with the many who have come and gone from Trump's circle in short time, even Bolton and whomever else is hired this week is vulnerable to Trump's nutcase philosophy of retire, quit, or get fired. And that's Chaz of Albany. And Robert says, rallying leader, two words, Elizabeth Warren. Well, you know, she's my senator. I at one point had a lot of faith that she might be the one, but I don't think there's been a lot of substantiation or follow through from her. I mean, I think her positions are correct. I don't think she's shown that leadership quality that I'm talking about.
But she's nonetheless one of the voices in the room. Again, you know, which voice will actually rise up to the top?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. But we need it now. Mike says, we need to pull out of Syria and the entire Middle East, for that matter. Why are chemical weapons the red line? Is burying children alive and in rubble that much better? And Lynn says, Syria too complex. If the audience knows the players in Syria, it is not complex at all. We assume Americans are stupid. First, less than 24 hours after the bombing, Israel attacked the base that was bombed the last time. Trump is staying with the bombast. No action.
You know, Syria is extremely complex. There are three different proxy wars going on in one country. I don't remember the percentage of the population who's been driven out of the country, but it's pretty high.
And it's interesting that today, Teresa, Assad is being attacked by Trump. Now, that is fascinating because, and then at the same time, the two players that are being attacked are Assad for his wicked ways and Obama.
Yeah.
He can't get over the fact that he and Obama are getting to a similar place, you know, in terms of what it has to be done with Syria. He just can't do it.
Let's just talk about John Bolton for a few minutes before we go to our top of the hour break. And reading the first couple of paragraphs of the New York Times article this morning, we mentioned this because John Bolton starts, today's his first day on the job, so put on your good suit and show up on time. Right. Shortly after Ambassador John Bolton was sent to represent the United States at the United Nations, an institution he had long scorned as an anti-American citadel of corruption, he hosted President George W. Bush for a visit. Are you having fun? Mr. Bush asked. It's a target-rich environment, Mr. Bolton replied. Mr. Bolton, who takes over Monday as President Trump's third national security advisor with Syria as his most immediate challenge and talks with North Korea and the future of the Iranian nuclear deal not far behind, loves nothing more than a good target. Over a long and colorful career, he has had many of them, the United Nations, first and foremost, but also the International Criminal Court and the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, North Korea, Iran, China, Russia, the Palestinian Authority, the European Union. And then there are the crusaders of compromise, as he terms the elite of the national security world, the diplomats he refers to as the high-minded, and the capital H and capital M, the true believers of the arms control priesthood, and of course the Republicans who succumb to such muddled thinking like Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and even Mr. Bush. Well, what will he do with Mr. Trump?
I think he's gonna manipulate him. I think he knows how to kiss up and knows how to make Trump feel like he's the smartest person in the room. He wouldn't have gotten as far as he has given, you know, with his kind of politics. And I think that he will be very dangerous and will help Trump push the button.
So kiss, as they say, keep it simple, stupid.
That's right.
And that's what he's doing with the president.
That's right. And that's all the president wants.
Is a simplistic guy.
Can handle.
You know, at any moment, he just writes out a tweet and sends it out. And here's a guy who knows, who's identified that in the president and who does the same thing.
Right. And he'll be like, that's a great tweet.
I read the coverage in the Post, in the Washington Post and the Times on this guy. And I'm not pleased. Because, frankly, I think there's almost the benefit of the doubt going on, while I think that this guy is real, real serious trouble for this country.
He's very dangerous.
And that you don't, a leopard doesn't change its spots. So you're going to say, okay, we're going to take you off of Fox, or we're going to take you off of this, and now you'll be in a different role, and you'll be a more responsible individual. I don't see that happening.
You didn't see that when he was the ambassador to the UN. You never saw him being responsible. He attacked the institution. I don't think he's going to change at all. I think he's going to keep doing what he's doing, and he's going to egg on Trump.
Well, the difference here is obviously the longevity of how long Bolton can stay in office.
Well, that's right. How long will that last?
Because, I mean, when he was ambassador, he had to leave by the end of that year
Yes, but the president was Bush.
Right.
And Bush is a moderate Republican.
Compared to...
Remember that Papa Bush was the head of the CIA and, you know, all the rest. They know what inside playing is about. And he had to leave because I'm sure somebody sent him a note and said, cut it out.
Well, he had to leave because he couldn't get confirmed by the Congress. He was a recess appointment, and he couldn't get confirmed by the Congress.
For a good reason.
Right.
He was not confirmable because he was so dangerous.
Right. And so I think that that's the key thing you've hit on, Alan, is he comes to this with fresh ethics questions having to do with the Bolton Pack and its interconnections with Cambridge Analytica and other groups. And he comes to this with the people, you know, the sort of the Washington establishment being deeply concerned about him, so concerned that with a Republican president, a Republican House, a Republican Senate, confirmation in the Senate, he cannot get confirmed, just like he couldn't get confirmed the last time.
You raise a very good question here, because since he can't be confirmed, it is interesting to me that here's a guy who is as close to the president's finger on the button as you could possibly find, and he doesn't need
confirmation
for that job. It's unbelievable.
Right, but it also means that those who are experts in the Senate and in the House, particularly, you know, because it's not a position that requires confirmation, but that they are wary of him, and they have been vocal about being wary of him. And again, let's remember that the job that the president has given him is the National Security Advisor, which historically, now of course, it wasn't not always the case, but in many cases, this job was intended to be the person, the honest broker, bring a range of information to the president for consideration. But he has a very firm agenda. We'll see how his temperament works with Trump. Certainly his agenda is not in line with Trump, but we'll see how his temperament works.
And do you think we'll know sooner rather than later? I mean, it seems like in all things in the Trump White House, they tend to come to the fore quickly.
Somewhat. But I also think that, going back to him not being confirmable, is this the opening salvo for Bolton being put up for another job down the road very soon? As we're talking about, John Kelly being on Kelly watch, whether or not he's going to actually stay in his job, could there be a chief of staff John Bolton at some point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Holy moly.
Yes, I think that could very well be. But if he doesn't need to be confirmed for the job he has
Holy moly. How could you do that?
It's possible, though. But, I mean, it's somebody who feeds into the president's ego. I mean, what better person than Bolton?
Right.
Well, and this is what we've been talking about for the last several days, that there is that circle, and you seem to
part of the chief of staff job is to be a liaison with the Hill. In fact, Bolton this weekend slipped away and went and spent the weekend with the House folks, and Speaker Ryan called a leadership gathering and had General Kelly come and be part of that discussion. And given the animosity toward him on the Hill, I don't know how that would work. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, I just don't know even how long he'll last as National Security Advisor.
Right.
And nor do we know how long Kelly will last.
Yeah, right. It's the biggest revolving door in Washington. And there's a lot of them, you know? But it really is a big revolving door, and it just destabilizes the country.
No, it destabilizes the world.
Yeah, well.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of us can sit around this table and say, wow, okay, John Bolton is the third National Security Advisor. How long will it last? It's very scary that he's there. Okay, if he leaves, who next?
Who's next?
Right.
It'll be, sort of like the guy he's putting up for the VA. It'll be somebody who talked to him about China at one point. He'll just pick them up.
Yeah.
Put them in.
Get your resumes ready. Right. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And Alan Chartok is here, Jill Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. We have a lot of letters, so we're going to get to those letters and get going here. And then we'll talk about other stuff. We have other topics to discuss and to figure out, such as the GOP impeachment talk strategy. of perhaps winning the midterms. We want to talk about Scott Pruitt some more and, of course, the fire that happened over the weekend at Trump Tower. So we'll get to those issues, but first, these letters.
Thank you, Joe. Keith writes, I'd like to give Trump some credit. Good morning, panel. I'm a vocal Trump critic, but I'd like to give Trump administration some credit for Friday's Russian sanctions, even though the sanctions are a year too late. Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska and Manafort employer, Deripaska's company's stock value plummeted 50% after U.S. sanctions were implemented on Friday. His company put out a press release that they may be in technical default on some of their debt due to their stock price. I still think that Trump is an embarrassment and is a clear and present danger to the U.S. Well, I want to go to Teresa, if I may, Teresa, with a question. The Congress, as I remember it, correct me if I'm wrong, stepped in with a whole bunch of sanctions almost unanimously and told the president against the Russians and told the president to implement them.
Mandated sanctions.
That's right. And the president didn't do it, not one of them. So letter writer says, well, congratulations for imposing some sanctions right now. But he's way behind the eight ball, right?
But I think they have begun to implement some of the congressionally mandated sanctions. But it took them a long time. They missed the deadlines. But they have begun to implement some of the congressionally mandated sanctions. And so the issue is, why did it require Congress to direct, to mandate that the administration do this?
What do you think, Joe?
Well, I think certainly there's no real policy coming out of the White House. I think, to Teresa's point, you know, yeah, it took Congress to take action, and then finally, after a year, the president is actually taking action. So,
and Libby, do you have any check-in on this?
On the sanctions?
Yeah.
Oh, I just think he doesn't want to do anything to make them angry financially,
right,
because they've got the goods on him. But today, what he, you know, going after him today around Syria, and the fact that the Russian stock market tanked this morning clearly is going to reverberate. But I wonder, you know, as I said before, we don't know which Russian oligarchs have invested in Trump's properties. We don't know that, because
right,
they won't.
We assume that's why we haven't seen a tax return.
Right, that's right. That's exactly it. So it'll be interesting to see if, okay, we're going to do the sanctions for 2 days and they hurt. Now we're going to take them back.
But the other thing we have to remember is some of these sanctions are because of Russia meddling in the U.S. election.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the president seems to not want to focus on is mm-hmm. the fact that Russia meddled in the U.S. elections, because he thinks that it reflects on his win. And that's a problem for us. We're, you know, how many months away from the next election, and have we had really the focus and attention we need to secure the 2018 elections? I dare say we have not. Now, reportedly, there's been a lot of effort at the state level and coordinated effort to try to strengthen the situation in our state elections, you know, because elections are run at the state level, I mean. But I think that's the underlying cause for the hesitance on the part of the president.
Okay, and Thomas takes some umbrage at something I said. Leader or someone to govern? Comment about needing someone to govern. We are in a representative democracy. We do not need anyone to govern us. We can govern ourselves. We need people who can lead us. I couldn't agree more, Thomas. That's exactly what we need. We need somebody who can lead us. And that's what we don't have right now.
We're getting there.
Okay. Thanks for everything you do, said Tom. And thank you, Tom, for
writing. Don't boo, vote.
That's right.
Don't boo, vote. Okay.
And Barbara from Rhinebeck. Good morning, panel. Are you being misogynistic? I hear you talking about rally and leadership in the Democratic Party, and you're mentioning men. I have not heard you mention Elizabeth Warren. Oh, you didn't?
Because
you were listening, you should have.
I think it came before.
She probably wrote before.
Oh, I see.
And I talked about Kamala Harris.
That's right.
And you did, or Kamala Harris from California. The press has to help with that rallying cry and paint the positive picture more broadly than the negative. And thank you, Libby, for having done that, and to you, Teresa.
But and this gets to Libby's point earlier about a number of people at the state and local level. There are a record number of women who are running for office at all levels of government this year. It's incredible. The number of women, whether it's for school board or city council, mayor, state rep, state senator.
Last night, we had our Capital Women meeting. We had a slew of candidates. Women.
Okay.
Historic numbers of women running.
Right. Okay, so I want to ask you guys a question. Guys is the wrong. People. I want to ask you women a question.
Yes, women, thank
you. Okay. Because there's some, you can't, no matter what you, okay, so.
I know, you're
it's all so hard, isn't
going
it?
Going downhill real quick.
Screw it.
right.
Okay, so here's the deal. Do you think there is an essential political part of women's genetic makeup that makes them better than men?
I think women deal with conflict and getting things done much differently than men do.
I agree with you. Yep. I agree with
And I think we see that over and over and over again. And I, you know, so I think that if more women were in office and in positions of leadership, I think we would see a different way of dealing with power. Not across the board. I mean, you know, you've got Republican women. You know,
we've got Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, we got Nancy Pelosi. We got Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, you know, it's. But I think in terms of a different ethic, a different politic, yes, I do.
Teresa, you have almost a sneer on your face.
Teresa pushed so far away from the mic, I think she's currently in Skodak.
She didn't want to answer that question.
No,
I just hate this topic.
Why?
I love this topic.
It's a very important topic.
No, great. I know. Because I'm whenever I say anything, people, I'm misunderstood on it. I think that all women don't lead in the same way. And so there are different people lead in different ways. Women lead differently than some women. They lead differently than men. I think part of the reason why this notion that, you know, the compromise and everything is because that was the route in for women when there were barriers, the way to get around the barriers were to act in this compromising way.
But I think, you know, women are mothers and manage their children, and that's like managing men in power. So,
but not to mention that if you're 51% of the population or more, then if we do have a representative style of government, there should be women in government who are represented.
Right. That's the bottom line. That you know, these doors are open now. I think you'll see all different ways in which women lead, and I think it's critically important that their voices be at the table. But there's no one, I don't see any research that says that there is just one way that women lead.
And Rocco in Rosendale, our very good friend who writes quite often, says,
Rocco.
Pete Seeger rightly said, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. This, in capital letters, is how we, quote, get a leader. And that's Rocco. I'm waiting. Janet says, it's the kids from Parkland who will unify us. We are looking up to the kids. Too bad they can't run. Well, they will be running.
They will be running.
They will.
And they will be voting in
larger
numbers.
That's the most important. They will be voting this November.
And they will be energizing others. I mean, look what we saw this past weekend. How many town meetings were held all around the country? I think it was close to 200, 170, whatever. I don't know the final number. But that these young people, and now not just from Parkland, they're from all over the country, including Chicago and Baltimore, you know, urban areas, that are organizing people to generate discussions on gun safety issues.
Well, there's a level of, you know, overtly active activism from these students, and again, it's gratifying to see them actually keep up with it and actually getting involved, organizing these town halls, organizing these marches. But the key is register to vote and vote in
and
November.
Actually vote.
Right.
And there's a group called Moms Demand Action, which you just see pictures, they tweet out pictures from their events, and where events where they had 20, 30 people, literally they're now having 200, 300 people. There's something going on out there.
But the response from the other side to these kids and to groups like Moms Demand Actions is absolutely vile.
Right.
Absolutely vile.
But it's not helping them. It makes them look worse.
Yes, it does to certain people, to people who think. It makes them look great to the people who agree with them.
But
to
I think,
30%.
But I think you're seeing a lot of people. You know, I see stories and tweets and analysis of NRA members who agree with them that you have to have some responsible changes. And I think that they, if they're open to them, not demonize everyone in the NRA, we can see some real change.
I think the best way of putting the whole gun control issue as a message is taking weapons of war out of civilian hands. I think that's a message that will reverberate and people can understand. It's not about taking away your long gun that you want to use to go hunting. It's about taking weapons of war away from people who are not precisely military.
And I think we're going to see also around healthcare. I know, Alan, you said you don't think so, but it's polling as one of the key issues in this upcoming election. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and Susan says, a Dem leader. It's not a leader that's needed. It's a clear message we need to put forth, what we stand for. And, of course, if you got the right leader, they'll put the right message, you know, forth. I mean, you got a leader in Trump who put the wrong message forth.
But it was still a message that resonated with his base, though.
Yes, that's right. Michael says, leadership. Good morning, panel. I agree with the fact that we need a national leader of the center and left of center. The WMC panel can't even agree on that. There are too many factions on the left, and every one of them sees themselves as the core issue. We need a real leader who can cut through this infighting. We have been lucky in this recent swath of Democratic victories in isolated elections. This won't cut it when 2018 and 2020 elections come around. If not Bernie, then who do the members think can carry this mantle and unify the groups of individuals? And that's Mike from Saratoga. And Roger said...
And given the congressional election, what you need now, between now and November, is in each congressional district leaders to emerge who will be their members of Congress. That's the most important thing in the next couple of months.
And Roger says, insults. An ad hominem derision of the president as the orange-haired fellow in the White House is unworthy of the panel. What if a member of the prior panel described previous incumbent as big ears? The howls of protest would have raised the roof. Please try to take a higher road. Thank you, Roger. One of us said that, right?
Didn't someone say? I believe it would be, but I'm not pointing fingers.
Right. That's right.
Well, I'm always interested when people write because of something one person said and ascribe it to the entire group. That's always fascinating to me.
All for one and one
for all.
That's
right.
I agree with Alan, says Joe.
All for one and one for all.
I agree with Alan, says Joe. Alan, you articulated exactly my thoughts about the overall picture of the political state in Washington. Schumer does not fill the shoes of the figure that Democrats need to go toe-to-toe with. DT. He is in the position of, to be that person. Don't get me wrong. Schumer does a lot of great things, but we need more. I agree with that entirely. Casey says, Bolton security clearance. Has Bolton received his full security clearance? Does anyone know if the White House press corps has asked about this? Best regards, Casey in Rexford. I don't know.
I don't know.
This is one thing I've wondered for a while, is how does he get security clearance? I don't know.
Well, a certain level, but not obviously all the way up.
Well, he can't have that job unless he has the highest levels of security clearance, because he's got to be able to go into the Situation Room, and you can't. You have.
And so if the FBI doesn't do the security clearance, you know, they go around and they ask everybody, you know, about the person, then what happens? Trump attacks the FBI.
President
grants them
the security clearance.
Okay, Teresa, a different Teresa. Alan is right. Alan is right. We need someone with fire in the belly to confront Trump and not the same old DNC caution that brought us into this mess. Teresa has to get over her Bernie hating. Hillary loving... Teresa has to get over her Bernie hating, Hillary loving stance. That's not going to cut it in these times. And that's from, quote, the other Teresa.
All right. Let's move on. And did you want to respond to that? Or
no,
are you okay?
No.
Decline the comment.
I don't hate Bernie. I just don't think he's the answer to everything right now. And I'm particularly concerned about some of these congressional districts where, you know, you have to have the right person for the district.
Well, yes.
Right.
But the last thing I want to do, Teresa, the last thing I promise you that I want to do is to get you angry.
But the truth is that
Hillary did not have that charismatic leadership, je ne sais quoi,
she didn't,
that would lead the Democrats, and Bernie did. You see, it's not that I don't admire your, you know, alliance.
Oh, my God, Alan, please.
Feasance, whatever.
Let's move on.
I think you're hitting the nerve here.
Just don't even start.
Start what?
Let's just move on to the next story, shall we?
Okay. I think I'm missing something, but okay.
Me too.
All right. So
let's talk about fire.
Fire.
I
at Trump Tower.
Right. Or Pruitt.
Well, he finally killed someone on Fifth Avenue. Trump. Remember, he said I could shoot someone on.
I don't like that.
No, this is horrible.
Yeah, I don't care. The fact of the matter is, this man fought against sprinklers in his buildings. If there were sprinklers in those buildings, the guy who was killed might still be alive.
Okay.
We really don't know that story. We don't. We
know that he fought against sprinklers in his buildings.
What we do, we know that. What we do know is that there was a fire in Trump Tower. An art dealer, a man died as a result of that fire. Mm-hmm. We also know that there was there were two tweets that came out from the president. Fire at Trump Tower is out, very confined, well-built building, firemen, and then weirdly in parentheses, and women.
Oh, by the way.
Did a great job. Thank you.
Nothing about
the person who had actually.
Well, there has been some material in the press overnight about him.
There was nothing from the president saying
criticism against the president from those saying that there was no, instead of saying that you built a great building and thanking the firemen.
Right.
Well, why can't you just say firefighters? Like,
why? There is a word for it, isn't there?
Not expressing any sympathy, any humanity for the man who died and maybe his family. That's what's missing from all this.
I mean, the headline
which is
being
always missing. From
he
him.
Bragged that his tower withstood a fire, but has been silent about the man who died in it. Okay.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, He could have shown a little bit of humanity, but he doesn't look. This is the man who threw paper towels to people in Puerto Rico, and that was his way of making up for not having electricity for still.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is a man who has no empathy whatsoever. This is a man who doesn't care about anyone but himself and his very tight circle. If Jared gets really in trouble, I think he'll be going to jail, and that'll be that. But, you know, I just think that this is indicative of who he is as a person. It's all about him all the time.
All right.
Sorry. I mean, this is
you know,
disgusting.
I can understand. I understand the I can understand the concern over what he tweeted and what he did not tweet. However, I think to put the fire, a fatality, whatever, on his shoulders or anybody else's connected with that building, you know, accidents happen.
But let's not forget, this is the second fire that's happened in the last 2 years there.
And there's no sprinkler system.
Right.
Why is it a tower that is so big? I mean, there's 50 more, I don't know.
Well, it's the quote-unquote 68 floors, but it's really 58.
Yeah, right. I mean, why is it that building somehow managed to get away with not having a sprinkler system?
Right.
It was built
in 83, so it wasn't even that long ago.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And he lobbied specifically to get that building grandfathered out so that he wouldn't have to spend the money to save somebody's life.
Right.
All right. We'll end there.
Okay.
Alan, Joe, Teresa, Libby, thank you very much. Yes, you're all okay? Everybody?
Everybody's okay, except for Teresa. She looks unhappy.
Right? Yeah, Teresa does look
unhappy.
Come on. All right. You'll be back on Wednesday, though, right? You're not that unhappy.
Yeah, no, I'll come back.
Oh, okay,
like, this is it, right?
Sorry, not coming.
I'm done.
Right, bye now.
I hope it wasn't anything I said.
Yeah, I can't imagine, Alan.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Never.
Not anything you said, Alan.
We'll be back right after this.